Substance. Stories about the stuff that shapes our world.
So actually, the reason I'm studying chemistry is because I have a strong interest in chemistry and physics. But due to the university entry examinations, I decided to go for more chemistry because I see more possibility of this technology helping us in the daily lives. So I'm the person who would like to see something I'm working on has really impact on our daily lives.
Substance. I'm Joe Hansen, and this is Substance, a podcast about the discoveries and innovations in chemistry and beyond, helping us build a sustainable society for the future. In short, we tell stories about stuff that shapes our world. And in this episode, we're talking about fiber. We'll be talking to Shengzhong Zhou about an innovative technology that aims to replace artificial fibers with natural ones. This switch would significantly reduce the carbon footprint of fiber materials and make them more sustainable. And there are several other benefits, which we'll touch on later. And in the second part of our episode, we'll talk to Julie Schumacher and Zach Royal about how coconut fibers are playing an important role in restoring coastlines, reviving ecosystems, and protecting many people's homes from floods. But let's first meet BASF's fiber bonding expert.
My name is Shengzhong Zhou. I'm currently leading the adhesive and fiber bonding business in Asia Pacific.
Zhou is a material scientist who works on composite fiber materials. In the most basic sense, a fiber is simply a substance that is longer than it is wide. There are essentially three different sources for fibers. They can either come from plants, things like hemp, cotton, or coconut. These fibers are special because they can store carbon dioxide that the plants removed from the atmosphere while they were growing. Other fibers can be produced from crude oil, like polyethylene, which means their production process releases carbon dioxide. And finally, there are inorganic fibers, like glass fiber and carbon fiber. Now, what are fibers used for? Well, on their own, fibers are strong and flexible, but they don't have much mechanical stability. That means they're easy to weave into soft, flowy fabrics for clothes, but they can also be chemically bonded together to produce hard, rigid materials that combine the best of both worlds, the strength of the fibers themselves, plus the mechanical stability of the binder that is sticking them together. You might have heard the term fiberglass before, which consists of glass fibers embedded in a plastic matrix. Or carbon fiber, the super strong yet lightweight material that's loved by rocket scientists and race car drivers. But that's not what Shengzhong Zhou is working on. He replaces artificial fibers with natural ones and uses a totally new substance called acridur to bind these fibers together.
Acridur is waterborne polymer. You can think it as a glue. It can glue a lot of different materials together to make it stronger and stiffer. So compared with other binders, it's very easy to be applied on the materials because it has a very low viscosity. And it also can be triggered to be solidified in a simple way, meaning if you heated the materials into 150 degrees, and hot press for 2 minutes, it will become very rigid and stiff materials.
With this new special kind of glue, you can glue together almost any natural fiber and then press it with heat into your desired shape. The possibilities for replacing traditional plastics are almost endless.
So the first time I see that our technologies can make these long fibers, flexible fibers, after simple hot melt, and then molded into very complex shapes, like very rigid plastics. I feel it's very exciting from my personal view. So it looks like a very tough plastic, but it also contains around 80% of the natural fibers. So I feel this is a very interesting and also have a bright future technologies. from my perspective.
Because these new materials contain so many natural fibers, their carbon footprint is negligible. They can even be carbon neutral, meaning that if you look at the whole product, no net carbon dioxide has been released during the manufacturing process.
So considering the nature of these fibers is capturing carbon dioxide rather than producing carbon dioxide. So the more natural fiber content, the more greener it could be. So this means other binder technologies cannot help to reach that level of sustainability.
There are lots of different natural fibers, but in Asia, none are as abundant as bamboo. In fact, we let a ton of bamboo go to waste. Zhengzheng Zhou gave me some numbers. Every year, about 500 million tons of bamboo are grown in the Asia-Pacific region. But only 30% of that is harvested, and even that is typically made into relatively simple products. Think chopsticks, cutting boards, scaffolding for construction sites, or simple furniture items.
So all these applications are relatively low-end, and high cost because of it's the high labor costs inside. So the cost to transport it and harvest this bamboo cannot be compensated by the profit of selling these products. So in this case, at least 70% of the bamboo are now has somehow wasted and cannot be further utilized.
But with the help of their new binder, you could use bamboo fibers, mix them with the Acrodur binder, and then heat mold them into very complex shapes. This significantly broadens the range of applications that bamboo could be used for.
That can meet the requirements from either furniture or automotive industries, as well as some home appliance applications. For those applications, we identify more and more customers' interests, and we foresee it has a great business potential here in Asia Pacific.
Besides the fact that natural fiber composites store carbon inside the material and can give unused bamboo a new life, Zhou points out two other advantages. First, Acrodur is water-based. And second, it has a very low amount of volatile organic compounds, also called VOCs. VOCs are molecules which you might have smelled in a new car. If you remove the VOCs, the smell is gone.
So currently, your door panels or your glove box or dashboards sometimes is made from PP or ABS.
In this episode, you'll hear these two abbreviations a lot. PP stands for polypropylene, an extremely lightweight plastic that you can find in yogurt containers, ketchup bottles, and things like that. ABS is short for acrylonitrile butadiene styrene, a mouthful, and a very durable plastic that can be made into things like cell phone cases, suitcases, even Lego bricks.
Those materials have certain plastic smell. With this Acrodur natural fiber composites, in worst case, it smells like natural fibers, like hemp. But with a better, let's say, odor removing technologies, the natural fiber smells can be further removed. And also, BASF has some unique technologies to remove all this VOC and odor from it. And by these two combinations, there's no smell at all.
The automotive industry has very high standards of odor testing. The odor is rated on a scale from 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Most of the plastics can get no higher than a 3.5. But the natural fiber composites can actually achieve a 5. Perfect marks, no smell. Another important argument for the use of more of these natural fiber composite materials in the automotive industry is their low weight compared to traditional plastics. That is of particular interest for electric vehicles because they are burdened by the weight of their heavy batteries.
Electronic vehicles is become more and more popular. But with this big battery, in general, the overall weight has increased 20 to 30%. So it's highly appreciated that you can reduce every gram of the vehicles as much as possible. So in this case, Acrodur natural fiber composites compared with PP and ABS, with the same strength, it's only have around 80% of its weights.
Every electric vehicle is equipped with about 60 kilograms of plastic in the driver's cabin alone. And Shengzheng Zhou says that all the plastic dashboards, door panels, seat panels, and so on could be replaced by natural fiber composites.
In general speaking, it's at least while saving around 15 to 20 kilograms for each car. I think in current industry, it's highly appreciated.
Car manufacturers who want to switch away from traditional plastics do not need to make big changes to their production processes. If they already have a hot press machine and the right mold for the part that they want to make, then they're set. They just immerse the natural fiber mats in the Acrodur binder, put these mats on the hot press machine, and mold it into the desired shape, just like the less sustainable materials that they're already using. But there are lots of other applications that reach far beyond the automotive industry. Take furniture, for example. Last year, the so-called future chair, made from natural fiber composite, won a large Chinese home furnishing product innovation competition.
The reason that our chair wins this award is because it's achieved such a high performance, high strength with such a thin layer of materials, and also with the possibility to be molded into a very smooth curve shape. This has been appreciated by this award.
The current plan is for the future chair to soon go into mass production, and it will hopefully be sold to customers in Australia and New Zealand. Shengzheng Zhou already has one, of course, and is a big fan of it.
At least to me, it's comfortable. It is very simple designing, and I think it's quite good chairs from my personal view. The chair is sitting in my office now, so I can sit on it every day.
And that chair is only one of many everyday items being made with natural fiber composites. There are also clothes hangers, home appliances, and suitcases. Shengzheng Zhou shared a funny story with me about how one of his customers tested the strength of this new suitcase that he was showing her.
One day, we'll go to an electronic vehicle customers in China. And the technical director, she's a lady. She just simply do not believe this material is stronger than polypropylene or ABS. So the simple way that she's doing is she puts these suitcases on the floor and she jump on the suitcases. And then she jump on the surface three or four times to check whether there's any crackings or any defects produced during its jumping. But eventually, there's no cracking and no defects. The suitcases is as normal. Then somehow, by this very simple experiment, she's convinced that this natural fiber composite materials is really has similar performance like ABS or like polypropylene.
It's success stories like this one that make Shengzheng Zhou believe in the potential of this new technology. He believes that at least the customers in the Asia-Pacific region will soon see more and more products made with Acrodur technology.
You will see some products in the supermarkets or the home goods markets very soon. So I feel in the next few years, the volume will be growing quite rapidly. So I was thinking about even around 0.5% replacement of the polypropylene or ABS in Asia-Pacific. It's already leading to a 15,000 metric ton volume of binders. That is already a quite high volume of fine chemicals already. So I feel that also if the oil price go higher and higher, the more attractive of this technology will be.
That's a wrap on our first story about how BASF uses bamboo fiber waste and turns it into something new and useful. Our second story takes us to the shoreline of New Jersey in the United States. My guests are Julie Schumacher and Zach Royal from the American Littoral Society. And just to clear things up, the word literal in their name has nothing to do with literature and books. It's a different word, L-I-T-T-O-R-A-L, that means coastal region.
We are a coastal conservation nonprofit organization. We've been around since the early 1960s. Our mission is to care for the coast and empower others to do the same. And we do that through a mix of habitat restoration, which is what both Julie and I work in. We also do advocacy work. We do environmental education, and we do community science.
The goal of their work is to keep the coastal ecosystems alive and healthy, which is sometimes tricky because of the intense development that's going on at the shorelines. Many people dream of having a waterfront property. They buy a house right on the beach because they want to wake up to the sound of waves crashing or see the sunset over the water. I asked Julie to describe the typical New Jersey shoreline to me.
We have, 200 miles of coast in New Jersey. Yeah. We have what's called Ocean Ave. There's typically it doesn't continually go down all of the shoreline, but in each town, there's typically an Ocean Ave. The entire, I'll say, west side of Ocean Ave will just have large houses with very little space in between them. You'll have some kind of dune, typically, that creates a buffer between the beach and the development, and maybe, I don't know, 50 yards of beach, maybe, sometimes less. That's what the ocean side looks like. And then all of our bays are heavily developed with lagoon communities. So some are even created, filled in wetland area, and just completely hardened with bulkheading. So those houses, again, are right on top of each other. It's difficult to find natural areas in our bays, in developed areas.
Especially in those developed areas, many coastlines are suffering from erosion. Waves are washing away the beaches. Water is seeping into people's basements. But why does this happen? Why does the water steal away the land?
I mean, the first thing to note is that erosion is a natural process. So there are forces that happen along your coastal environments. There's something called the littoral drift. So it's a general current that kind of flows along your shoreline. So over time, that kind of takes sediment and sand with it as it flows in a certain direction. There are also storms that have larger waves that will remove some of the sand and sediment. And that's being exacerbated a little bit more now, as Julie talked about, with climate change. And there's been changes that we've done to the upland systems as well. So in your bays and your estuaries in particular, there would have been sediment that had eroded from the uplands that flowed down into it. And that would have replenished some of this sediment that gets lost through these natural processes. But with development, we've blocked a lot of that natural erosion that is happening up there, or the ability of that to kind of flow into these systems. So a lot of areas, there's a lack of sediment. We'll say it's sediment starved now. Because of that, we're seeing this increased erosion.
And in recent years, the issue has gotten worse.
Climate change is definitely exacerbating all of those issues. So it's creating higher water levels. So now there's more water that's moving inland, and that is slowly eroding away these areas that weren't being touched by water before. We have that increased frequency of these larger storms. So now we have these larger storm events that take out a whole bunch of erosion, whereas more frequently than they would have in the past. So those things are definitely contributing to this increase of vulnerability that we're seeing along our coastal shoreline.
The littoral society is trying to stop this erosion by creating so-called living shorelines. A living shoreline is basically the opposite of a hardened shoreline that would be made from bulkheads or seawalls. Zach could explain why living shorelines are so beneficial for the entire ecosystem.
A living shoreline, it's really like a suite of techniques that are all designed to stabilize your shoreline while also creating or enhancing habitat. The big thing about the living shorelines is we're using that habitat to take advantage of a number of ecosystem services that it provides. So if you think about salt marshes, we find that your salt marshes can protect your shoreline if they're big enough, just as well as a hardened structure can, something like a bulkhead or a seawall. But it also provides these additional benefits such as habitat for fishes and birds. It helps clean your water. It can act like a sponge and soak up floodwaters. It aids in carbon sequestration. And it can provide some recreational opportunities as well. So you get all these additional benefits when you do this more nature-based approach than when you do strictly a hardened shoreline. So we think the living shoreline approach is a much more holistic, much more ecosystem-friendly approach, and really provides way more benefits than just your bulkhead or seawall.
One of their recent projects took place at Shark River, very close to where Zach and Julie work. In this community, the sea was slowly but steadily eating away at the shore. The beach had already completely disappeared, and the small strip of marsh was also in the process of eroding. In some places, the road was less than a meter from the water's edge.
So the community was concerned about the loss of their shoreline. They were also very concerned about the frequent flooding that was occurring that really came with high tide. So they had a very low elevation shoreline, and every time there was a very big high tide, the road was flooding, and it was happening more and more often.
This type of flooding that happens without a big storm is also called sunny day flooding. And it happened so regularly in Shark River that the community wanted to bring an end to it.
Originally, there were people that came in and looked at, well, we can put up walls or seawalls or big bulkheads. And in this case, it was really the community that rejected that idea. They were aware enough of the downsides of putting in that hard structure, and they wanted to do something more natural. So we got involved in this process.
The goal for Zach, Julie, and their team was clear. Reestablish the beach and build up the marsh. So they set to work to create a living shoreline, to widen the beach, to restore the ecosystem, and protect the road from constant flooding. After they collected enough data about how the water is moving and how the wind is blowing, they got to work. They knew they had to dump truckloads of sand onto the beach, but that wouldn't suffice on its own. Without additional protection, that sand would just get washed away again. They needed some kind of structure to break the intensity of the waves. So they filled large bags with rock and shell and placed them in the water. And in front of those wave breakers, they put long logs made from coconut fiber.
They come in 10-foot long sections, and they range in diameter. We often use 12-inch diameter. They go up to probably 2-foot or 24-inch diameter. They're lightweight as far as when they're dry. So what you're looking at is basically you're taking, I guess you could say, like netting that is turned into a tube and stuffed with coconut fiber. So the actual netting itself is made out of coir, made out of fiber. So that just looks like kind of mesh, if you will, like a fiber mesh tube. And then it is stuffed with husks. So it is brown in color, pretty lightweight to carry a 10-foot log. I mean, maybe one weighs, 30 pounds, maybe. You can carry it on your shoulder, no problem. One person can carry one, a 12-foot one. When they get up to the 24-inch diameter, you'll need two people to carry them.
Similar to the bamboo fibers that Zhengzhengzhou uses to produce furniture or suitcases, the coconut fibers are an abundant material that normally is thrown away as waste.
The ultimate source of this comes from coconut plantations, primarily in India and Sri Lanka, and kind of that Southeast Asia. So the husk material is really a waste material or byproduct of these plantations that are growing for like coconut oil or other types of products. And then they, besides just letting that go to waste, they use that husk material.
And the logs for coastal restoration are just one way that the fibers come in handy. They're used in a ton of other different ways that you might not even notice. Do you have one of those brown welcome doormats at your house? Those are also typically made from coconut fibers.
The use of coconut fiber has been used forever.
Centuries people have been using
coconut fiber. From insulation to matting and carpeting to rope. You know, there is, you know, people, mattresses, padding, all kinds of things that coconut fiber has been used for planting. It has a very natural pH, so it stabilizes soils.
So you have rocks and shells to break the waves, and then you have coconut fiber logs to do what exactly?
They function really well to retain sediment. They do a great job. So in this case, right, we're putting sand on the beach and we want to make sure that that sand stays there for as long as possible. Those coconut fiber logs work great at helping keep that sand on the beach. So that was their function in this living shoreline approach.
The coconut fiber logs don't just retain the sand that's already there. They also help build up the beach even more, as Zach explained.
As water flows over them, it brings suspended sediment with it. And then water will flow back through these logs when it recedes, but it'll trap all that sediment in there. So that over time, that's going to slowly build up and ultimately you will get a better marsh edge and that elevation that you want. So it's all those coconut, all that fiber material that's in the middle of the log there, all that husk material just traps all that sediment before it flows back in. So that makes them such a good tool for this type of work.
What's great is they're very flexible. So you can, whatever contour you're trying to achieve is quite easy. You just stake it in however you want the contour to be. If you want a straight line or you need something to curve around a marsh edge, it's very easy to move it.
After about 2,000 feet of coconut logs were in place, sand was trucked in from a nearby quarry to raise the shoreline. Then came volunteers from the community who helped plant native plants to further stabilize this newly created beach and dune. Once the coconut fiber logs have been put into the water, they slowly degrade. After a few years, they'll be completely gone, but their effect will outlast them.
But the idea is by the time they are breaking down, you have established the environment or the ecosystem that you want to establish, and it's persisting now. So in the case of like a marsh, by the time this thing has been broken down, all the marsh vegetation has regrown, and now it's growing up and it's actually covering the log. And now that vegetation is serving as the protective aspect of your shoreline. So they do break down, but you use them in a way to rebuild that habitat, and then that habitat can persist through time.
The Shark River Project was done in 2023. And now, 3 years later, Zach and Julie told me that the restoration work was successful. The community went from constant flooding of their road and having almost no beach at all to an average of about 20 yards of walkable beach for the residents to enjoy. In part, at least, thanks to the coconut fiber logs. This was our episode today about fiber. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll be back next month when we talk about sulfur. This has been Substance, stories about the stuff that shapes our world. Substance is a podcast by BASF, produced by Territory Agency, in collaboration with Wake Word and me, Joe Hansen. Research and scripting by Danielle Sedbrook, Claudia Doyle, Hardy Röde, and Joe Hansen.